Life is made up of experiences. Experiences shape our perspectives and allow us to pass along knowledge. In this podcast, I sit down with listeners like you and find out that no matter who you are, everyone has a story to tell. I'm Ethan Smith, and this is Life Experienced. While it's no secret that Facebook dominates the social media market today, it wasn't always that way. Names like GeoCities, Friendster, and MySpace were familiar to users of the web before Facebook's launch in 2004, and many other social media sites got their start during this time period. Our guest today, David Cook, remembers this time period as inspirational for his career.
I always kind of wanted to be an inventor as a kid. Kind of a mixture of, or then even kind of like when I'd be a doctor as well and stuff like that. So that's what I essentially ended up studying in school. But I was really always inspired by my brother. He, when he was in Harvard, he created his first business that he eventually sold at Thompson Peterson. I think he sold it shortly after graduating as well. So he always did a pretty good job of that. And even when I was like 12, 13, I was kind of helping him do certain things with that business as well. So my brother and I were always really close, and my sister was always really close as well. And I guess in terms of like, if you're trying to be an inventor, like, I guess the startup guy is kind of like the thing that kind of comes closest to that in the early 2000s. And so my brother and I, and really my sister and I too, I was very involved in all the early social networks. So we knew people like Friendster eventually, and which is kind of silly. And then MySpace and stuff like that. We were all using course, back yeah. then, Zanga and all the other stuff.
I vaguely remember some of these things from, you know, middle school.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. I was using all these things in middle school as well.
Dave's brother Jeff built two successful websites during his time at Harvard University in the late 1990s, both of which helped students edit documents like essays and resumes to ensure their highest quality. When Jeff sold these businesses in 2002, it inspired Dave and his sister to explore new ideas of their own.
Yeah, and my sister and I were essentially kind of talking one day. It's like we thought we could build a whole social network around kind of a our high school and stuff like that. We called it myyearbook.com. We eventually pitched it to our brother, who had money from selling his first company too, right after graduating. And my sister and I were just 15 and 16 at the time. We were kind of really interested in kind of starting this social network. And my brother loved the idea. He essentially became our first investor, and he connected us with a lot of people who were able to help us build our first website. So back then, I think we launched around April 2004, 2005, and we launched it in our own high school and stuff like that. We had it developed, kind of outsourced the idea to India at the time. Would have been very expensive to have built in the US, and we had it built very cheaply. And we pretty much just kind of grew it out of our own high school. My sister and I, we were telling everyone to join. We had kind of silly t-shirt campaigns. We were like, hey, get a free yearbook, my yearbook t-shirt. And we were giving it to everybody. Within a week and week and a half, we had signed up pretty much my entire high school.
And for those of you who, like me, don't recall My Yearbook, it was a social media website aimed at high school students where they could connect with friends online, share information, and discuss similar interests in discussion forums, much like most social media websites of the time.
By the end of a couple months, we had signed up over like 250,000 people, and a part of that was we're kind of working with some early forum sites and stuff like that as well, and kind of just kept growing from there. Word of mouth was really helping spread the word about My Yearbook, and really just kind of motivated us a lot. I mean, we became very involved in social networking after that, and essentially working with developers and all this other stuff. And we were still only 15 and 16, or kind of grown and stuff like that. And within our first year, we actually had over 1 million members on that site. And that was pretty cool. We started kind of making cool deals. We were early partners with Hulu. So we had a bunch of Hulu content on the app. So you could watch stuff like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and all this other stuff. And back then, we were trying to be everything and seeing what sticks. So, like, we were a social network for like high school students. We had like notes and stuff like that, where like you can share like high school notes or whatever, and groups and all this other stuff. And you could also watch TV content because why not?
Sure.
And, yeah. But yeah, so we kind of kept growing like that for years. Essentially, we eventually were able to raise money, first round capital, and US Venture Partners, I believe, were our first ones. And we raised a couple million from them, which really helped us in terms of being able to establish our first office. And we were finally able to hire more developers and just people who could really help us grow the company even quicker. And yeah, so my sister and I and brother and I, we were all kind of just kept working from there, kind of just kept grinding away, making new social features that we felt like would stick and stuff like that.
Sure.
One of my ideas, or our ideas early on, was Lunch Money too, which was a digital currency that our members could use. And it was pretty cool. Essentially, it had real value because people, you know, on other apps today where they could buy a coin or whatever the currency going on in the game and stuff like that. And
sure, yeah.
I was really motivated a lot by different games I was playing and stuff like that.
Of course,
we released this into the thing. And so Lunch Money was something our users were doing. They could like battle photos and like see who had the most interesting photo and do all this other stuff that kind of like very like mid-2000s kind of like social networking.
Yeah.
Apps, And but yeah, they were it gave them a thing to dump their lunch money into. And another thing we really loved about My Yearbook and was our commitment to certain causes. So we had partnered with Alex's Lemonade Stand, a cause for childhood cancer, and then a bunch of other ones like for animals, animal rights, and or just a bunch of other ones like education and just different causes that we allowed our members to donate their lunch money into. And that essentially, because we had such a large teen user base, by 2009, we actually ended up being one of the largest sources of teen giving on the internet. We were donating over $250,000 a year to various causes in the form of lunch money. Because typically these kids can't really, they don't have much money of their own, but with lunch money that had real value, they were able to donate to certain causes, and it really felt nice to kind of make an impact with that.
As one might imagine, running a rapidly growing social media website as a teenager comes with a steep learning curve. Here's what Dave had to say about the next steps for the company. What do you remember about being a teenager and having to start dealing with all of these like tech-related things, business-related things all of a sudden? Like, how much of a learning curve was there? And do you recall anything that was particularly difficult?
Oh, it was definitely a massive learning curve. And so I'm not like a developer and or anything like that. So we had to typically just rely on like very smart people that we were able to hire at first. And we had a great team around us. I love the people at My Yearbook. And so pretty much, yeah, we completely had to rely on there. Back then, just like draw up a ton of wireframes for different products that we felt like might enhance social features and stuff like that. And we kind of kept growing along those lines. By I think 2009, we even had 40 million members, and kind of kept growing from there. I think by one of those years, between 2009 and 2011, we became profitable as well. And that's when a South American company called K-Pasa bought us, and they actually bought us in a $100 million deal. So that was really nice. So it was like right around the time I was graduating college, that deal went through. So that was pretty sweet. And
yeah, definitely. It sounds like it.
Yeah. And yep. So part of that deal was my brother would kind of eventually go on to be the CEO of that company. My sister and I remained founders, and I, after college, I moved back east. I started working in the office at New Hope again, and kind of just kept doing the same thing. I was working on product. I was helping build new social features. We did a bunch of cool things, like the rebrand too. We eventually merged all the international users from K-Pasa onto My Yearbook, and eventually in that process also changed the name of My Yearbook to Meet Me. So the rebrand was pretty massive.
Yes.
And that was a pretty massive undertaking, like kind of right after high school. We all were kind of working on that for a while. And then did some other really big projects over the years. We were translating the site into 18 different languages and trying to really make it more international, attractive to international users and stuff like that. And then other ways, we were just trying to always improve the site, like improve chat, improve all the other things that help it make it sticky and stuff like that.
Right. So you said at this time you were, or during part of this, you were in college. Was that in a related field, or what did you decide to pursue there?
No. So I guess in college, I was always kind of studying to be a doctor a bit.
Okay.
I actually took a ton of neuroscience classes and stuff like that, just trying to see if things would work out. I mean, I have a small computer science background just from the people I've worked with and like kind of like having right. to like call things from the database and stuff like that. But otherwise, yeah, I guess that was kind of my backup plan if things didn't work out.
And as it turns out, Dave wouldn't need that backup plan. More on that right after this. Welcome back. Following the purchase and rebrand of My Yearbook, Dave began developing two new ideas, ReaderCoin and PodCoin, two apps that pay listeners like you to listen to audiobooks and podcasts. He became an investor in his own ideas thanks to the buyout of My Yearbook, and he got to work. How was the idea for PodCoin born? Because certainly podcasting, really last year was kind of the year that all of a sudden it's mainstream and everybody's like, whoa, I'm not listening to podcasts yet. Maybe I should be. And now we've got news that there are over 700,000 podcasts listed on Apple Podcasts. So what was it that really got you interested in this space, and what motivated the idea here?
I guess I was always a big podcast listener and stuff. And I mostly like a lot of comedy ones and stuff like that, like the Jackie and Laurie show, one of my favorites. And I love a lot of comedians, so that's kind of a lot of what I listen to. But I listen to like Vergecast, stuff like that as well. So I guess from that point, I was always very interested in it. But before PodCoin, we had actually launched an app called ReaderCoin, which same concept, but we paid people to listen to audiobooks and stuff like that. And we were trying to really help Indian self-published authors kind of help build their initial audience through the use of ReaderCoin. And my brother, he had just written a children's book called Veronica and Volcano. It was like a cute book about a girl who's discovering things around a volcano. And we tried to essentially build his audience and stuff like that. And we initially did things like Goodreads, which you kind of feel like PodCoin, ReaderCoin is almost a little bit of things like Goodreads giveaways, where like authors would give away their books and stuff like that. And essentially try to get reviews, ratings, all this other stuff where like they can get on Amazon. And it was pretty cool in terms of, there was a lot of positive feedback among the indie authors we were able to get on ReaderCoin. But obviously there's it's kind of a hard area to kind of break into. Pretty much Amazon kind of does everything involved with publishing, so it makes it a bit hard.
Right.
All the other big publishers kind of make it hard to get a lot of authors onto your app as well, because they can't really post their books anywhere. But it's very much different with podcasters, where they actually do own their own content and stuff like that. And something, even when we were launching ReaderCoin, was like, well, this could be good for pretty much all content and stuff like that. And like, since audio books and podcasts really aren't that different in terms of a kind of creation and stuff like that, we thought maybe this could actually essentially be a really good idea for podcast discovery as well. And we were building that up the entire time while we had ReaderCoin launched. And then within the first few weeks of launching PodCoin after ReaderCoin, it actually became significantly larger. And so everyone was really liking it. We didn't have the bonus podcast feature yet. We actually just had the bonus podcast feature in late February launched. And that's really been helping drive a lot of podcasters to us as well, because they're starting to see that they're able to get their podcasts to get a lot more listeners and all this other stuff. So at first we just kind of launched, we're a very like minimum viable product, kind of a podcast catcher. We have maybe about 630,000 podcasts on our app right now. Let's see, or maybe more than that. I don't know the exact number at the moment, but a ton of podcasts you can listen to. And essentially, we do eventually plan on building out a lot of the audio tools and stuff like that as well. So like right now, you'll see that we don't have all of them yet. We kind of want to add like all the other big ones, like 2 times listening, 1.5 times, or playlist, a bunch of other features that we eventually tend to get to eventually. But we feel what really makes us unique is our ability to build communities and drive discovery right now. So we're kind of focusing on those tools at the moment, and really kind of can't wait to launch them and just kind of see people's reaction to them as well. And yeah, that's kind of pretty much where we're at right now. We're just really trying to focus on building up our user base as large as possible, and also trying to get PodCoin in front of as many podcasters as possible.
While rewards for listening are a key feature of the PodCoin app, Dave's vision for the app includes facilitating discovery of new podcasts and building communities among the listeners of each show. Here's how he hopes the features of the app will accomplish these goals.
PodCoin is essentially a digital currency as well that people can earn while they're listening to podcasts. For every 10 minutes they listen to a podcast, they earn one PodCoin. And then what we really like for it is what we've seen, its ability to drive discovery by, if you just increase that amount slightly, make it 1.5 PodCoin per 10 minutes, you could drive a massive amount of listening to essentially whichever podcast we want. And we have much more plans and stuff like that on how we want to see PodCoin used. Like we might eventually, and well, I guess to further what we're doing right now on PodCoin, we also have streak rates. So like if you listen in for multiple days, you could earn eventually up to 2.5 PodCoin like per like 10 minutes and stuff like that. And yeah, people can exchange that for, I mean, right now, if you listen to podcasts, you won't really get rewarded for it anywhere else. So our listeners really like it. They're getting awarded. I guess if you want, you could kind of say it's like, hey, if you listen to enough of our podcast, and get a cup of coffee on me or something like that. Or
sure.
Yeah, like we give away Starbucks gift cards, Amazon gift cards. Probably want to eventually really expand what we're able to offer in the PodCoin store as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's going to be interesting as we keep growing and are able to do that. Right now, though, we're mostly just trying to build our user base up as much as possible. More users will make the podcasters happy and stuff like that. And we really also want to build a community around them. So that's something we felt like we were really good at. We come from a very big social background and stuff like that with My Yearbook and Meet Me and all this other stuff. So we really want to kind of we're introducing likes and comments really soon that since we're able to drive so much listening to certain podcasts, some people are even wondering, it's like, well, is this real and stuff like that? And we have no reason to believe it's not real. But I think once we introduce that, it'll really kind of help nail down the authenticity of like all the listeners they're getting. Because we believe like it'll be a really positive kind of exchange between the podcast creators and their listeners in terms of just like them being able to comment or compliment them on different great episodes that they maybe liked or something like that. And really just drives a lot of feedback back and forth between them. Maybe even they could eventually donate their PodCoin to those podcasts, kind of in like a Patreon kind of style of donating to a podcast, which we think would be pretty cool as well.
Dave's desire to connect with content creators is the reason I met him. He spends much of his time talking to podcast producers and app listeners, figuring out what people want in the app. Additionally, he has partnered with some of the same charities he mentioned earlier from the My Yearbook days to allow users of the PodCoin to make charitable contributions through the app. PodCoin has found much success just months after launch, with almost 1 million minutes listened by users each day, a statistic that will no doubt continue to grow. Given his history, I asked Dave if he had any advice for someone who has an idea and wants to get it out there. So if there's one thing, so you've obviously had a lot of experiences that other people may not have had. I mean, I can't imagine starting a company, a huge website thing with my brothers and my brother or my sibling when I was a teenager and launching it to such success. But if there's one piece of advice you could give to people who have an idea like this about getting started and moving forward with ideas and finding support for them, what do you think that would be?
I mean, it's definitely pretty hard to make a business today and stuff like that, but also once you've got an idea, just essentially kind of launch it essentially as quickly as possible. I mean, holding off is pot kind of like more procrastination and stuff like that. If you're going to be a perfectionist to try to get it done, I mean, Podcoin still has a lot of work to do. And in terms of our audio controls and stuff like that, that we eventually want to see be a lot better. But people are still enjoying it. Our net promoter score is really high and stuff like that. And really impressive. So you don't need all those things and stuff like that. Sometimes you could make up in terms of not having those early things at first, which is kind of trying to be great at customer service and making sure you just follow up with people and like listen to people and really giving the customers you see that you first kind of start getting, like giving them kind of exactly what you want, kind of building the product around them a bit. But it's also definitely just also really hard depending on whatever somebody might be making. So that advice right. might not work for some people, but for certain things, that's probably pretty good advice.
Dave will very likely continue to build on his past successes as he moves forward with Podcoin and his other ventures. Connecting people with shared interests is one of the great aspects of the internet, one that is often overshadowed by algorithms and ads. My hope is that Podcoin will not only be a profitable venture for Dave, but that it will serve to connect content creators with the people who enjoy their shows most. Life Experienced is hosted and produced by Ethan D. Smith and is primarily distributed via anchor.fm. The show is also available via DSound, a decentralized audio sharing platform built on the Steam blockchain. For more information, visit dsound.audio. The music in this podcast is composed by Lee Rosevere and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. For more information, visit freemusicarchive.org. If you like the show, be sure to share it with others. Links to learn more about this episode, as well as more information on the podcast itself, may be found by visiting lifeexperienced.org. And for those of you still listening, Dave recalled some fun memories from working with his siblings. They are as one might expect.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Well, in social, I think everything's always kind of a little bit funny. See kind of the craziest things potentially happening on the app every day. I feel bad to maybe talk about some of them, but I guess in terms of even just working with my brother and sister, we would kind of play a lot of pranks in our office and stuff like that. So we would do things like we'd fill up each other's offices with balloons. I'd like to sneak into my sister's office early in the morning and flip her computer over and do a bunch of, like, pretty much just turn everything in her office over, which is a little bit mean. But
that sounds like
she got me back plenty of times as well.
From the office or something, you know, like when Jim puts Dwight's things in Jell-O. I mean,
pretty much, yeah. We definitely a lot of fans of the office were at Meet Me, and we definitely did a lot of pranks on each other. I remember my poor sister probably got a lot of it. I remember sometimes she'd have something taken hostage, and like she'd see ransom notes. It's like, if you ever want this item of yours back, you need to do these things.
Hi, everyone. I just have a couple of things I wanted to address here at the end of the episode before we're done. Dave was actually my first remote interview for the show, which brought with it many new challenges, one of which involves the audio quality, which you'll notice is slightly lower than usual. If you want more information on the method I decided to use to record the interview, be sure to check out lifeexperienced.org, where I'll be documenting the entire process in a blog post very soon. Also, as you may have already figured out, this show is available on Dave's app Podcoin, and it's been great to be featured as a bonus podcast over the past few weeks, as it's driven a lot of new listeners to the show. I hope you'll take a moment to download Podcoin from the App Store or Google Play to give it a try today. You can subscribe to this show and all of your other favorite shows, and you can even follow my personal feed to see what I've been listening to lately. Be sure to use invite code LIFEXP for 300 free Podcoin when you sign up. Finally, if you're looking to start your own podcast, let me know. I'd love to offer some tips and advice based on my experiences producing this show. Send me an email at lifeexperiencedpodcast@gmail.com or hit up the show's accounts on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. All of those links are at lifeexperienced.org. As always, thanks so much for listening, and get out there and enjoy experiencing life.